Hello and welcome to the Kitchen Table Theology Podcast, where each week, Pastor Jeff Cranston explores biblical theology that provides practical life applications in an understandable way. Thanks for joining us at the table. Let's get started.
Hello and welcome to Kitchen Table Theology. I'm your host, Tiffany Coker. Along with my dad, Pastor Jeff Cranston, we are working our way through a Bible overview series. Beginning back with episode number 143, we have studied more than half of the books of the Bible now, both Old and New Testament books, along with their theological themes. If you've missed any, we encourage you go back and give them a listen. Before we get started today, we want to take just a second and celebrate something fun with you all. The Kitchen Table Theology Podcast now has over 80,000 downloads, which is incredible to think about. So a few fun facts in regards to this. Kitchen Table Theology has now been downloaded on 6 different continents. I would say all the continents, but Antarctica is not on our list. So 6 continents, 84 countries, which is amazing. The most popular episode was the very first one where Pastor Jeff introduced Kitchen Table Theology and discussed Revelation, how God has revealed himself to us through the Bible. Last fun fact here, 6 of the top 10 most downloaded episodes were from the Eschatology series. So I think a lot of you really loved that series. All of that to say, Dad, when you started this podcast almost 4 years ago, you probably had no idea all the places your voice would go. Isn't that right?
It's so scary. No, we had no idea. Jen Denton and I, when we started in April of 2020, and I think I've said this on here before, statistics have since proven out that the worst year to start a podcast was 2020, and the worst month to start the podcast was April. And so we started in April of 2020. And yeah, it's just amazing to me. So if you know any scientists who are working in Antarctica, please drop them a line and let them know, hey, you need to listen to Kitchen Table Theology. That way we'll hit all 7 continents. But it's very, very incredible. We thank God for the breadth of where we're reaching, any number of countries, 40-some countries, I think. We saw
84.
Something like,
84 countries.
I guess I heard 48. I have dyslexia with
numbers.
Maybe
I said 48.
I don't know. Well, whatever it is, whichever one it is, it's still beyond anything we ever dreamed about. We were just hoping to make it to 25 podcasts and call it a day. And today, welcome to podcast number 189. So
amazing.
Thanks for listening, Kitchen Table Theologian.
Yes.
Thanks for telling others about it. Thanks for the ratings. Thanks for the reviews. That's helped all of that happen by you doing that. So thank you very much. Tiff, let me read you a statement as we begin today, and you tell me who it's referring to. I think you'll know. He could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. He went to sleep with gum in his mouth and woke up with gum in his hair. When he got out of bed, he tripped over a skateboard and by mistake dropped his sweater in the sink while the water was running. He could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. Who is that?
Alexander. I almost at one point had that book memorized. It's a favorite in our house.
I love that book. I literally have it here in my office on my bookshelf because I do enjoy reading that. And I think it's perhaps it's as popular as it is because we've all had many days where we felt like Alexander, but he doesn't hold a candle to the man we're going to talk about on today's podcast.
Right. And that man, and also the Old Testament book, would be Job. So you might have guessed that when we talked about a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. Dan, in recent weeks, we've been dealing with a lot shorter books in the Bible. We've had Titus, we've had Esther, but today we're making a huge swing as we're looking into the Old Testament book of Job, which is a much longer book of the Bible.
Yeah, I feel like we've been a little bit spoiled in recent podcasts. But let's dive in today to one of the longer books in the Bible, Tiff, as you said. It contains 42 chapters. And as Tiffany said, it's the book of Job. Kitchen Table Theologian, if you have ever said, with friends like these, who needs enemies? Or why is this happening to me? Then Job is your man and this is your book.
Absolutely. Let's start with the basics. Can you give us a brief overview of the book? A long book, so we'll have to try to keep it brief here. But I wonder, How many of us have really read that in a while? I know for me, it's been a couple of years, not maybe a book that we just pick up and read frequently. So give us a brief overview.
Yeah, and I haven't read it. I mean, just snippets of it from time to time, but I haven't read through the entire book in quite a while until I started prepping for the podcast today. The story starts off with Satan telling God that, sure, Job praises you now, but if I could get a hold of him, he would end up cursing God, and God allows that to happen. Let me turn to one of my favorite authors, Max Lucado, and for him to give us an opening picture, sort of a brief little overview as the book starts. Max has a study Bible called the Max Lucado Life Lessons Study Bible. And in the introduction to Job, he says this: his empire collapsed, his children were killed, and what was a healthy body became a rage of boils. From whence came this torrent? From whence will come any help? Not from his wife. You can't blame her for telling Job to curse God, but to curse God and die? Then comes friends. They mean well, but they comfort poorly. They tell him he must have been pretty bad to get it so bad. Job tells them to take their theology back to the dime store where they bought it. Job goes straight to God and pleads his case. His head hurts, his body hurts, his heart hurts, and he can't tolerate any more half-baked answers. And so he demands of God, why is this happening to me? And Max gives us a good start there. And then as we read on, we find Job questioning God and God answering him. And God answers Job with a torrent of questions, and they overwhelm Job. And the result of it all is that Job learns that God owes no one anything, no reasons, no explanations. And if he did give them to us, we wouldn't understand them anyway. Well, at the end of the book of Job, we see, as does Job, that although God owed him nothing, God gave him everything. All that he lost, God gave him back double, except for his children. Because as we all know, when you lose a child, when a person loses a child, gaining two more children doesn't make up for the one that was lost, right? Two sheep, and you get two sheep back, or four sheep back, yeah, that makes up, or goats, but for children, not at all.
Well, that definitely jogs our memory, helps us remember what the whole book of Job is about. It gives us maybe a little bit new understanding into the book as well. I love that introduction from Max Lucado. Let's turn the page now and have you tell us who wrote the book. Can we assume that the author was Job? How about when was this written? Where do we fall into the timeline of the Old Testament?
Yeah, and just before I do that, we should say that if you're interested in the Max Lucado Life Lessons Study Bible, we'll include a link in today's episode notes. Well, yeah. Oh, yeah. Thanks for the easy questions.
Just a few.
Yeah. So let's start with the author of the book of Job. The author of the book of Job is unknown. Several suggestions, as you imagine, have been put forth as plausible authors. Some say Job himself. He would have been the best one to have recalled his own words. Others suggest, and by others, I'm talking about Bible scholars, Elihu, who was the fourth friend of Job, who spoke toward the end of the story. Some have put forward Moses' name, that Moses perhaps wrote this book of Job. Various biblical writers and leaders have been suggested, or some say it was many editors who compiled material over the years. So there's no definitive answer on who exactly wrote the book. But just by the reading of it, it's most likely written by an eyewitness who recorded the detailed and lengthy conversations that were found in the book. In Old Testament times, authors sometimes referred to themselves in the third person. So Job's authorship is a pretty strong possibility. But end of the day, we don't, with precision and accuracy, know exactly who wrote the book.
I don't think that we have really addressed this question through our Bible Overview podcast before, but was Job a real person, or is this more of a fictitious fable that someone wrote? Was he just symbolic of a suffering person, or was he a real man?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Here's what we know about Job, who was a real person. He was a wealthy landowner. He was a husband. He was a father. He's one of the best-known biblical heroes that we have in our entire Bible, but we know little more than that he was stripped of everything without warning, and that his faith was severely tested.
Okay, that's good to know, just to clarify. Last question I have for you before we get to some theological themes, I think. When was the book written? Where does it fit into the, you put the word in, chronology. I got it.
I did.
Chronology of the Old Testament.
I was wondering if you were going to run into that. You said it perfectly well.
I said it
well.
Right. So where does it fit into the chronology of the Old Testament?
Yeah, I find this very interesting. Although the book does not directly specify times and dates, there are clues we can use to make some determinations. So as you read through the book and you understand the context of the Old Testament, it seems as if Job lived during the time of the patriarchs, which places him between 2100 to 1900 BC. According to Job 42:16, Job lived an additional 140 years after his tragedies occurred. Perhaps he lived, some say, to about 210 years of age. His long lifespan generally corresponds to that of Terah, who was Abraham's father, to Abraham, to Isaac, and also to Jacob. Additionally, Job's wealth was measured in livestock, as was Abraham's. So like the patriarchs, Job used God's unique title, El Shaddai. You don't see it, that title of God used very often outside of the patriarchs. And by the patriarchs, we're talking about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Job uses that unique title, which means God Almighty, of El Shaddai. Here's another major clue. The book of Job does not mention the Mosaic Law. So it indeed, as you're looking through the book, Job's daughters were equal heirs with his sons. And Job himself, though not a priest, offered sacrifices, because once the law came in, only priests could offer sacrifices. Job's offering sacrifices. That was impossible under the law. So though we cannot be certain, Job may have lived during the time of Jacob or shortly thereafter. We're told he lived in the land of Uz, not Uz. But no one's quite sure where that was or where that even today would have been located. Archaeology has yet to unearth this location. It's there somewhere. Dr. Roy Zuck tells us in his commentary that, quote, the customs, vocabulary, and references to geography and natural history all relate to Northern Arabia, end quote. So we're guessing around just after or around the time of Jacob, the Northern Arabia area, the peninsula there.
Very interesting. So Job, even though it's further on in the Old Testament, it more lines up with timing of events that happened in Genesis. All right, that was a great brief look at that. Thank you. Let's move to some of our theological themes. I'm sure there's a few in this very lengthy book.
There are. And so like we do in all of our podcasts, we'll funnel them down to only today, only two that I think uniquely stand out in Job. So let's start with the most obvious theme theologically in the book, and that's suffering. If this book is about nothing else, it's about suffering. When suffering hits, it not only affects the individual, but as we see in this book and as we see in our own lives, it often affects the family and the community. So fittingly, Job gives us the opportunity to reflect on suffering and faith from various perspectives. So we get a perspective from Job's wife, from Job's four friends, from Job himself, from God himself. So that really helps us to develop a theology of suffering. In this book, we really view suffering from the vantage point of the sufferer. That's Job. We see how personal it is. We see and feel how profound it is. And so through Job, we can recognize our own questions about suffering because he's asking some of the same questions that we ask. And quite often throughout the book, we might even identify with the defenses that he offers and the reason or reasons he expresses for not deserving this calamity that has been thrust upon him. And I mean, it was a calamity. It was horrific loss. I mean, he lost everything. And it's in Job's personal wrestling with God over his suffering that we may be uplifted and encouraged by Job's testimony of faith in spite of the suffering. Secondly, so major theological theme, suffering. Secondly, We hear from those who indirectly experience suffering. So that's Job's friends. If you can call them friends, when we see a loved one or a close friend suffering, we want to offer some words of comfort and encouragement. And sometimes we find ourselves saying some dumb and wrong-headed things. We've all done it. I have heard some terrible things said at funerals by very well-meaning, well-intentioned people. But when they say it, you just, oh my word, you cringe when you hear it. We just find ourselves not knowing exactly what to say. Our intentions are good, but our well-meaning words and actions are not always helpful. And in Job's friends, we recognize some of the common reasons given to explain experiences of suffering. And there's a third way that we gain some knowledge of a theology of suffering here. In this story of Job, we have the rare opportunity to understand the divine perspectives of it all, God's perspective. God himself personally responds to Job and to Job's friends, and really in an unprecedented way, we're granted a glimpse of God's perspective on human suffering. That's, I think, the major theological theme in the book.
I know probably a lot of us have a tendency to think in a way similar to what we see Job's friends saying. Why do good things happen to bad people? Well, if we do good things, maybe God will bless us. And if we do bad things, then that's when God punishes us. But we see from Job's life that that really is not the case. And Job sort of sets them straight on that. In chapter one of Job, he's described as upright, and yet still all of these terrible things are happening right to him. But despite all of that, Job continues to trust God and know that he is the one in control above it all. And I love that. I think you said it earlier. It can be an encouragement to us. Okay, so we have first that theology of suffering. You said there's two themes for today. So what's the second one you want to tell us about?
Well, let's just call it God's sovereignty. Many find comfort in the belief that God is present with them in their suffering. And you see the sovereignty of God in all of this book. Job reminds us that even assuring words of God's presence can have a negative effect. And by that, I mean this. You read through this book, you find Job at times wishes God would leave him alone. God, just get off my back and stop being so preoccupied with the trivial sins of humanity. So Job's under this tremendous stress of great suffering. And you see that even a word from God intended as comfort can be turned upside down. And yet, God remains in control of everything. There's his sovereignty. No matter how we act toward him in all of this, he is still sovereign. Both Job and his counselor slash friends, they're certain that everything that happens, both good and bad, is the will of God, and that God has ultimate control. Even when, and I think this is important, God is in control. We hear this through them. He's in control even when human beings are the ones who cause the suffering. So to believe in God as the instigator of all that happens makes it more difficult to trust God when one is in the midst of a series of terrible events. It's a great theological dilemma to maintain that God is in control of all that happens and at the same time grant that humans often act in defiance of God's will. There's a tension there. Well, is God really in control if people are acting in defiance of what he has said? And so that gives us something to wrestle with there. And finally, God's control, quote unquote control in Job, it's not simplistic. It's mysterious. There are times it is hidden, and there are times it appears to us rather complex. And yet we discover in the end, not only that God can be trusted, but that God is good. Saint Hesychius of Jerusalem was one of the early church fathers. He lived in the early part of the 5th century, so between 400 and 450 AD. And I found this quote of his. He was writing about the book of Job, and I think it's an excellent way for me to shut up now and to sign off on today's podcast because I've done all the talking today, and I apologize about that. But man, it's hard to squeeze 42 chapters down into a 20-minute podcast. Here's what he said, St. Hesychius. You see the greatness of Job's external wealth, but his internal wealth was even greater. Did I say that right, external wealth? Let me say it again. You see the greatness of Job's external wealth, but his internal wealth was even greater. The visible riches were splendid, but the invisible riches were even more splendid because they last. Visible riches grow old, lose their value, and continually collapse in the most pitiful corruption and destruction. And so Job learned the value of what was and is most valuable, and that's a life trusting in God's sovereignty, fully submitted to his will, and knowing that in the end, that God indeed is fully sovereign and he is good.
Thank you so much for listening to the Kitchen Table Theology Podcast today with Pastor Jeff Cranston. If you're enjoying the podcast, it would mean a lot to us if you would take just a second and leave a rating or a review. We really do appreciate your help in getting the word out to others. Don't forget, you can check out today's episode notes and more at jeffcranston.com. You can also email us anytime with questions at pastorjeff@lowcountrycc.org. As always, thanks are due to our friends at Low Country Community Church here in Bluffton, South Carolina, and at Streamline Podcast for making this podcast possible. Next week, Lord willing, we'll be continuing our Bible overview series with a look at Paul's very short letter to Philemon. Until then, always remember that the real power of theology is not only knowing it, but applying it. Thanks for joining us at the table.
You've been listening to the Kitchen Table Theology Podcast with Pastor Jeff Cranston. Join us next time for more insights into biblical truth. If you'd like to know more on today's topic, please check out our show notes. If you have a question from today's podcast, kindly email us at pastorjeff@lowcountrycc.org. If you're enjoying this podcast, would you consider leaving a rating and review? We deeply appreciate your help in getting the word out. And be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or in your favorite podcasting app to continue this journey with us as we learn about and apply God's Word to our lives. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time here at Kitchen Table Theology.